So I'm very happy to be here. My name is Rita Noonan. I'm glad to be here for lots of reasons, and one is I also have something about a movement in my slide as well. I do think that's really what's changed the world. If you think about what has changed the world, it's usually not one intervention at a time, even though I will talk about some of that today. But I want to just give a little more emphasis to the discussion of violence, what we know about it, how to prevent it. And because a lot of the intersection that Jalila was just talking about also kind of cuts across crime and disorder and other kinds of illegal activities that can really make people feel afraid or unsafe in their environment. So I'm going to weave in a little of what we also know from criminology. So I'm a fan of David Letterman. I'm a big fan of lists. I think, you know, how much can I tell you in 15 minutes? I said, I'm just going to tell you the top 10 things I think you need to know. Not everything, but I think these are the top 10. And they are selected with an eye toward things that will help us understand this intersection better. So first thing I want you to know about violence is it kills our children. If you look at the top 10, if you're an epi person, if you already know violence, this is not a big surprise, but just look at number 1, 2, and 3. That's our little injury center at CDC tackles those issues. Obviously, 2 and 3 are highlighted for our purposes here, and all the rest of the causes combined don't even come close to suicide or homicide. So it's an enormously burdensome problem, and it's killing our children. In fact, every day in the United States, 16 young people die between the ages of 10 and 24. They're murdered. And I had to put in my little pitch here. This is so we can think like movement people. If this were something else killing 16 kids every day, flu, infection, pick something, I really think people would be outraged and say, this is not acceptable, especially in light of the fact that we know a lot about how to prevent this. These are our children. This is somebody's child, 16 of them every day, and that needs to change. Second thing I want you to know is the consequences for survivors are very substantial. Already talked about death and other physical disabilities, problems. There are mental health issues, a variety of those, depression, anxiety, also sexual and reproductive health issues. There's lots of different ways to think about the intersection. I also want you to know we all pay a price for this. This is not something we can say at somebody else's neighborhood, let somebody else worry about it. Everybody pays a price for this. We know violence is devastating to communities and even surrounding areas. Property values decline. It creates a climate where there is not the economic growth that there could be. We know there's medical costs, direct costs. This is very costly. If you start thinking about the criminal justice system and all of the services for adjudicated youth, you will really be looking at something that's enormously expensive. It makes prevention look a lot cheaper. Victims and offenders are disproportionately adolescent and young adult males. So this, you know, this is not news to anybody, but I do think it helps us focus a little bit on what kinds of populations might we want to target and what does that mean for our efforts when we're thinking about an intersection. Similarly, we know that time and place matter a lot. There are spatial and temporal patterns that are very predictable. So you can think about, and again, this is where I'm weaving in some criminology and information about crime, 70% of robberies happen in public places and assaults. Most violent crimes are committed by strangers except for homicide and domestic violence. And geographically, these kinds of things are clustered. And we also know there's a temporal clustering, that it's we know what peak times are. So this is a slide I actually borrowed from John McDonald. But it just shows you that in a study in Seattle, they segmented the city into 30,000 segments. And you can see that half of the crime happens in about 5% of those segments. So place is extremely important. And I think that really does help us understand some of the ways that we're thinking about this intersection that are place-based approaches. Number 6, early exposure to violence is connected to chronic disease conditions. This comes out of the Adverse Child Experiences Study, which is funded by CDC. We reference it all the time, but we haven't really taken it to heart to think about, you know, how do we reduce early childhood exposures to different kinds of neglect, abuse, violence, sexual abuse? And they do lead to incredibly costly and hazardous things for our young people. Again, these are children. There's a lot that we know about how to prevent these exposures. So anyhow, there are things like diabetes, stroke, cancer. There's certainly ways we can crosswalk with chronic disease better. More specifically to the topic today, we also know that violence is linked to physical activity and healthy eating. We kind of think there's two dominant ways. One is access to physical activity, and I think Delilah talked about that. So children who are afraid to go out, won't walk to school, won't go play. Barbara Barlow just got a Hero Award, and she's a big, big person who has worked in child injury prevention and child safety. And she started in Harlem. She worked in a children's hospital and said, you know, these parks are littered with needles. There's no safe place for children. Let's adopt a park at a time. And she slowly built this whole movement around making New York City safe for children with incredible success rates. So you should look her up. She's really, truly a revolutionary and has inspired people to do great things. So we know there's the physical activity piece, but there's also the access to food. So we talked about shopping less, eating more processed foods. Food providers might not set up in areas that are marked by violence. So number eight, we know we can prevent youth violence by using effective programs. There's a variety of programs, lots of them you'll find on the Colorado Blueprint site. CDC has a book of best practices in youth violence prevention. We know a lot, and I love it when Larry Cohen does an introduction. He was one of the co-chairs for the meeting we just had with Robert Wood Johnson on this intersection. And he just said, you know, we could cut the rates at least in half, knowing what we know right now. Is that right, Larry? Or maybe even more. So instead of saying, well, we don't have enough science, we don't know what to do, this is a social problem. Yes, it is a social problem, but we know a lot about how to prevent violence, and we really need to get started. So these are just some programs. There are plenty of them. I think they tip a little bit toward the individual level side of things, but there's certainly community level solutions. Delilah mentioned crime prevention through environmental design, and that just makes a very serious attempt to understand how physical characteristics of a place can actually make crime and violence more or less likely. So we talked about eyes on the street. There were really wonderful renovation projects that we talked about at the last meeting in Atlanta with Robert Wood Johnson. And they were deliberate about, you know, renovating park areas along a river or what have you, so that people would be walking, cycling in areas where there was natural surveillance, so people could see what was going on. So SEPTED, we think, is very promising. Business improvement districts are showing some good evidence, and we think that makes a lot of sense. And it makes the community more attractive for economic development, for, again, all the kinds of things you want to see in a community. So there's a lot of community development perspectives. And other place-based approaches. I know criminologists have talked a lot about this, John McDonald among them, but that we can reduce some of the social conditions that really make violence more or less possible. This isn't magic. This isn't guessing. This is real evidence. People in criminology have been figuring these things out, actually, for a long time. So you can think about, you know, place-based policing or organizing cooperation with police for block captains or walking groups, and also to some extent reducing physical decay. And I know a lot of this came up when Giuliani did the broken windows, you know, approach in New York City, but there is actually some evidence that cleaning up areas and having communities take ownership in those areas can actually reduce crime and violence. There's also the emphasis on policy change, which I think is also really important, especially for public health people. Policies, we know, can affect populations and affect more people faster than one intervention at a time, right, or, you know, small group interventions. So deconcentrating poverty, reducing things like number of bars, alcohol selling outlets, injury would probably be one of the major beneficiaries of policy changes around alcohol establishments, but also just working, again, across jurisdictions and working with police. We know that this is true based on criminology. So we also know that national efforts are underway to prevent youth violence and other forms of violence before it starts. So we have an initiative called STRIVE, Striving to Reduce Youth Violence Everywhere. It's not sure exactly what the future of STRIVE will be, but we started this initiative to have a national network of folks who can raise awareness about youth violence, put tools and resources together, and really create a national movement and network. So CDC is working to provide some of those tools and do some of the outreach and skill building, and I'm happy to talk about that if we want at the end. We also mentioned Unity, so I won't repeat it again, but I think it's a very significant move in the right direction, and Larry Cohen is one of the co-chairs, so he can talk more about that at the end. But again, there are things underway. We understand more or less that, you know, what to do. We're trying to get mobilized around doing it. This is just a map of where CDC is involved. STRIVE are the green squares, and Unity are the orange circles. So you can kind of see what the distribution is. So basically, you know, what does this all mean? That's the quickie version of, you know, a condensation of lots of things, just to convince you we actually do know what to do. And I'm very tired of people saying, well, we don't know what to do. No, we need to stop saying that. We do know what to do. There's plenty of effective approaches and very promising approaches. Let's start doing it. So the second thing I really think that pertains to our conversation is these spatial regularities put a big emphasis on place. It also, to me, puts a big emphasis on some of the health equity issues that I think we can really, you know, go hand in hand with our partners who care about a lot of the same people and a lot of the same places that have not only violence problems, but have problems that go along in communities that are racked with violence, you know, lack of economic development. What do the schools look like in places that have high levels of violence? Violence is often the sentinel measure of what's going on in a community. So we can really link arms with people who care about health equity, and I think that would take us a long way. There are very disproportionate effects on young people, and I think that helps us focus on populations with limited funds, with limited time. And I also think some of the coordinated place-based interventions that we've learned about from criminology and public health that would lead to better community development, more safety, zoning changes, and we know we have programs. Those, when put together in a concentrated way, instead of sprinkling all over, concentrating some of our efforts in meaningful ways can really go a long way. So back to this intersection, the Robert Wood Johnson folks with CDC and Prevention Institute pulled together about 30 experts, and we really started this conversation. We certainly haven't nailed everything down, but I think it was a really good start. And some of the next steps that we've outlined have to do with measurement, intervention development, and collaboration. So in terms of measurement, even just today, you know, I've been talking about violence, I've been talking about crime. So what is it really that is the most important thing for us to track and measure? We need to measure it better. So we need to be clear what we're talking about. Because a lot of people in violence prevention will say, well, that's crime. You know, do we really want to put all of our money down there? You know, maybe that's not really where our key issues are if people are not being harmed by violence. So being clear about what we're talking about, measuring that well, and a lot of the perceptions around crime, fear, disorder, we aren't measuring those very well either. And we have to track better what are these effects on different kinds of behaviors. So what is it actually doing around human behavior? Are they not going outside? Are they actually shopping or cooking differently? So I think we can do a lot better around that. Some of the design features of the prevention through environmental design, I think measuring those, being really clear about what are those features and measuring those, and then just being more careful about our science and our evaluation, I think, be very helpful. The interventions, you know, there's a lot of stuff we're doing already. You know, I guess we'd call this the low-hanging fruit. There are certainly opportunities that exist right now in front of us. So if you're already involved in crime control or violence prevention efforts, even if they are sort of the broken windows approach, cleaning up graffiti or public spaces, we can see what are the effects of physical activity and other outcomes, nutrition, diet, cooking. So that wouldn't be that hard to do. Similarly, some of the health promotion efforts around physical activity and healthy eating could pay much better attention to what are these outcomes for violence and other kinds of indicators that we care about. Are they reducing violence? And I think that we all come together around community development. So there's different ways to think about it. Some are crime-driven. Some are actually driven by wanting to promote physical activity. But I think where we can kind of come together is around community development. And I think there was a lot of consensus in the room at the RWJ meeting that that's probably a very good model for all of us to use. Building those communities, communities that work, communities that function, communities that have good outlets for playing, safe outlets that provide healthy foods. And a lot of this, I know, is integral to how people are talking about health equity. So we can also look at those efforts that should simultaneously affect both kinds of outcomes. And last, collaboration. We always say this, but we do mean it. We're usually talking to people who are already converted, people who, you know, are friends and family who are already in public health. And that's a good start. I mean, even just going across the campus, so the injury people talking to the chronic disease people is actually, it was a big deal. It shouldn't be a big deal. We need to do it more. But we also need to really include people who work with park services, urban planners, you know, city planning. There's a lot of stuff around, you know, environmental design. Who are those people? They're not usually at the table with us. Sociologists, criminologists. Honestly, they've been talking about things that public health sounds like we're just discovering it for the first time, like social capital. That's actually an extremely old idea. It's been in criminology for at least 30 years. So I really think we just need to be better about bringing people together and being thoughtful about moving forward, creating that movement. How are we going to train? How are we going to collaborate? And I think those things haven't been ironed out yet, but I think these are some of the areas that we've identified. There are others, and I'll let Larry help me answer questions at the end, but this is at least the direction we're moving in based on the RWJ meeting.